fast. Before the guards can stop him, he closes a hand around my throat, squeezing my trachea with his fingertips. I choke, my face hot with blood. "The simulation manipulates him," says Janine. I can barely hear her over the pounding in my ears. "By altering what he sees, making him confuse enemy with friend." One of the guards pulls Tobias off me. I gasp, drawing a rattling breath into my lungs. He is gone. Controlled by the simulation, he will now murder the people he called innocent not 3 minutes ago. Janine killing him would have hurt less than this. "The advantage of this version of the simulation," she says, her eyes alight, "is that he can act independently, and is therefore far more effective than a mindless soldier." She looks at the guards who hold Tobias back. He struggles against them, his muscles taut, his eyes focused on me, but not seeing me. Not seeing me the way they used to. "Send him to the control room. We'll want a sentient being there to monitor things, and, as I understand it, he used to work there." Janine presses her palms together in front of her. "And take her to room B-13, she says. She flaps her hand to dismiss me. That flapping hand commands my execution, but to her it is just crossing off an item from a list of tasks. The only logical progression of the particular path that she is on. She surveys me without feeling, as two dauntless soldiers pull me out of the room. They drag me down the hallway. I feel numb inside, but outside, I am a screaming, thrashing force of will. I bite a hand that belongs to the dauntless man on my right, and smile as I taste blood. Then he hits me, and there is nothing. Chapter 35. I wake in the dark, wedged in a hard corner. The floor beneath me is smooth and cold. I touch my throbbing head, and liquid slips across my fingertips. Red blood. When I bring my hand back down, my elbow hits a wall. Where am I? A light flickers above me. The bulb is blue and dim when it's lit. I see the walls of a tank around me, and my shadowed reflection across from me. The room is small, with concrete walls and no windows, and I am alone in it. Well, almost. A small video camera is attached to one of the concrete walls. I see a small opening near my feet. Connected to it is a tube, and connected to the tube in the corner of the room is a huge tank. The trembling starts in my fingertips, and spreads up my arms, and soon my body is shuddering. I'm not in a simulation this time. My right arm is numb. When I push myself out of the corner, I see a pool of blood where I was sitting. I can't panic now. I stand, leaning against a wall, and breathe. The worst thing that can happen to me now is that I drown in this tank. I press my forehead to the glass and laugh. That is the worst thing I can imagine. My laugh turns into a sob. If I refuse to give up now, it will look braver to whoever watches me with that camera. But sometimes, it isn't fighting that's brave. It's facing the death you know is coming. I sob into the glass. I'm not afraid of dying. But I want to die a different way. Any other way. It is better to scream than cry. So I scream and slam my heel into the wall behind me. My foot bounces off and I kick again, so hard my heel throbs. I kick again and again and again, then pull back and throw my left shoulder into the wall. The impact makes the wound in my right shoulder burn like it got stuck with a hot poker. Water trickles into the bottom of the tank. The video camera means they're watching me. No, studying me, as only the erudite would. To see if my reaction in reality matches my reaction in the simulation. To prove that I'm a coward. I uncurl my fists and drop my hands. I am not a coward. I lift my head and stare at the camera across from me. If I focus on breathing, I can forget that I'm about to die. I stare at the camera until my vision narrows, and it is all I see. Water tickles my ankles, then my calves, then my thighs. It rises over my fingertips. I breathe in, I breathe out. The water is soft and feels like silk. I breathe in. The water will wash my wounds clean. I breathe out. My mother submerged me in water when I was a baby, to give me to God. It has been a long time since I thought about God, but I think about him now. It is only natural. I am glad, suddenly, that I shot Eric in the foot instead of the head. My body rises with the water. Instead of kicking my feet to stay abreast of it, I push all the air from my lungs and sink to the bottom. The water muffles my ears. I feel its movement over my face. I think about snorting the water into my lungs so it kills me faster. But I can't bring myself to do it. I blow bubbles from my mouth. Relax. I close my eyes. My lungs burn. I let my hands float up to the top of the tank. I let the water fold me in its silken arms. When I was young, my father used to hold me over his head and run with me so I felt like I was flying. I remember how the air felt, gliding over my body. And I am not afraid. I open my eyes. A dark figure stands in front of me. I must be close to death if I'm seeing things. Pain stabs my lungs. Suffocating is painful. A palm presses to the glass in front of my face, and for a moment, as I stare through the water, I think I see my mother's blurry face. I hear a bang, and the glass cracks. Water sprays out a hole near the top of the tank, and the pane cracks in half. I turn away as the glass shatters, and the force of the water throws my body at the ground. I gasp, swallowing water as well as air, and cough, and gasp again, and hands close around my arms, and I hear her voice. "Beatrice," she says. "Beatrice, we have to run." She pulls my arm across her shoulders and hauls me to my feet. She is dressed like my mother, and she looks like my mother, but she is holding a gun, and the determined look in her eyes is unfamiliar to me. I stumble beside her over broken glass and through water and out an open doorway. Dauntless guards lie dead next to the door. My feet slip and slide on the tile as we walk down the hallway as fast as my weak legs can muster. When we turn the corner, she fires at the two guards standing by the door at the end. The bullets hit them both in the head, and they slump to the floor. She pushes me against the wall and takes off her gray jacket. She wears a sleeveless shirt. When she lifts her arm, I see the corner of a tattoo under her armpit. No wonder she never changed clothes in front of me. "Mom," I say, my voice strained. "You were dauntless." "Yes," she says, smiling. She makes her jacket into a sling for my arm, tying the sleeves around my neck. "And it has served me well today. Your father and Caleb and some others are hiding in a basement at the intersection of North and Fairfield. We have to go get them." I stare at her. I sat next to her at the kitchen table, twice a day, for 16 years. And never once did I consider the possibility that she could have been anything but abnegation born. How well did I actually know my mother? "There will be time for questions," she says. She lifts her shirt and slips a gun from under the waistband of her pants, offering it to me. Then she touches my cheek. "Now, we must go." She runs to the end of the hallway, and I run after her. We are in the basement of Abnegation Headquarters. My mother has worked there for as long as I can remember, so I'm not surprised when she leads me down a few dark hallways, up a dank staircase, and into daylight again without interference. How many dauntless guards did she shoot before she found me? "How did you know to find me?" I say. "I've been watching the train since the attack started," she replies, glancing over her shoulder at me. "I didn't know what I would do when I found you, but it was always my intention to save you." My throat feels tight. "But I betrayed you. I left you. You're my daughter. I don't care about the factions." She shakes her head. "Look where they got us. Human beings as a whole cannot be good for long before the bad creeps back in and poisons us again." She stops where the alley intersects with the road. I know now isn't the time for conversation, but there is something I need to know. "Mom, how do you know about divergence?" I ask. "What is it? Why?" She pushes the bullet chamber open and peers inside, seeing how many bullets she has left, then takes a few out of her pocket and reloads. I recognize her expression as the one she wears when she threads a needle. "I know about them because I am one." she says as she shoves a bullet in place. I was only safe because my mother was a dauntless leader. On choosing day, she told me to leave my faction and find a safer one. I chose abnegation. She puts an extra bullet in her pocket and stands up straighter. But I wanted you to make the choice on your own. I don't understand why we're such a threat to the leaders. Every faction conditions its members to think and act a certain way, and most people do it. For most people, it's not hard to learn, to find a pattern of thought that works and stay that way. She touches my uninjured shoulder and smiles. But our minds move in a dozen different directions. We can't be confined to one way of thinking, and that terrifies our leaders. It means we can't be controlled, and it means that no matter what they do, we will always cause trouble for them. I feel like someone breathed new air into my lungs. I am not abnegation. I am not dauntless. I am divergent. And I can't be controlled. Here they come, she says, looking around the corner. I peek over her shoulder and see a few dauntless with guns, moving to the same beat, heading toward us. My mother looks back. Far behind us, another group of dauntless run down the alley toward us, moving in time with one another. She grabs my hands and looks me in the eyes. I watch her long eyelashes move as she blinks. I wish I had something of hers in my small, plain face. But at least I have something of hers in my brain. Go to your father and brother. The alley on the right, down to the basement. Knock twice, then three times, then six times. She cups my cheeks. Her hands are cold. Her palms are rough. I'm going to distract them. You have to run as fast as you can. No, I shake my head. I'm not going anywhere without you. She smiles. Be brave, Beatrice. I love you. I feel her lips on my forehead, and then she runs into the middle of the street. She holds her gun above her head and fires three times into the air. The dauntless start running. I sprint across the street and into the alley. As I run, I look over my shoulder to see if any dauntless follow me. But my mother fires into the crowd of guards, and they are too focused on her to notice me. I whip my head over my shoulder when I hear them fire back. My feet falter and stop. My mother stiffens, her back arching. Blood surges from a wound in her abdomen, dyeing her shirt crimson. A patch of blood spreads over her shoulder. I blink, and the violent red stains the inside of my eyelids. I blink again. And I see her smile as she sweeps my hair trimmings into a pile. She falls. First to her knees, her hands limp at her sides, and then to the pavement, slumped to the side like a rag doll. She is motionless and without breath. I clamp my hand over my mouth and scream into my palm. My cheeks are hot and wet with tears I didn't feel beginning. My blood cries out that it belongs to her, and struggles to return to her, and I hear her words in my mind as I run, telling me to be brave. Pain stabs through me as everything I am made of collapses, my entire world dismantled in a moment. The pavement scrapes my knees. If I lie down now, this can all be done. Maybe Eric was right, and choosing death is like exploring an unknown, uncertain place. I feel Tobias brushing my hair back before the first simulation. I hear him telling me to be brave. I hear my mother telling me to be brave. The dauntless soldiers turn, as if moved by the same mind. Somehow, I get up and start running. I am brave. Chapter 36. Three dauntless soldiers pursue me. They run in unison, their footsteps echoing in the alley. One of them fires, and I dive, scraping my palms on the ground. The bullet hits the brick wall to my right, and pieces of brick spray everywhere. I throw myself around the corner and click a bullet into the chamber of my gun. They killed my mother. I point the gun into the alley and fire blindly. It wasn't really them, but it doesn't matter. Can't matter. And just like death itself, can't be real right now. Just one set of footsteps now, I hold the gun out with both hands and stand at the end of the alley, pointing at the dauntless soldier. My finger squeezes the trigger, but not hard enough to fire. The man running toward me is not a man. He is a boy. A shaggy-haired boy with a crease between his eyebrows. Will. Dull-eyed and mindless, but still Will. He stops running and mirrors me, his feet planted and his gun up. In an instant, I see his finger, poised over the trigger, and hear the bullet slide into the chamber, and I fire. My eyes squeeze shut. Can't breathe. The bullet hit him in the head. I know because that's where I aimed it. I turn around without opening my eyes and stumble away from the alley, north and Fairfield. I have to look at the street sign to see where I am, but I can't read it. My vision is blurred. I blink a few times. I stand just yards away from the building that contains what's left of my family. I kneel next to the door. Tobias would call me unwise to make any noise. Noise might attract dauntless soldiers. I press my forehead to the wall and scream. After a few seconds, I clamp my hand over my mouth to muffle the sound and scream again. A scream that turns into a sob. The gun clatters to the ground. I still see Will. He smiles in my memory. A curled lip, straight teeth, light in his eyes. Laughing, teasing, more alive in memory than I am in reality. It was him or me. I chose me. But I feel dead, too. I pound on the door twice, then three times, then six times, as my mother told me to. I wipe the tears from my face. This is the first time I will see my father since I left him, and I don't want him to see me half-collapsed and sobbing. The door opens, and Caleb stands in the doorway. The sight of him stuns me. He stares at me for a few seconds, and then throws his arms around me, his hand pressing to the wound in my shoulder. I bite my lip to keep from crying out, but a groan escapes me anyway, and Caleb yanks back. Beatrice! Oh, God! Are you shot? Let's go inside, I say weakly. He drags his thumb under his eyes, catching the moisture. The door falls shut behind us. The room is dimly lit, but I see familiar faces, former neighbors and classmates, and my father's co-workers. My father, who stares at me like I've grown a second head. Marcus. The sight of him makes me ache. Tobias. No, I will not do that. I will not think of him. How did you know about this place? Caleb says. Did Mom find you? I nod. I don't want to think about Mom either. My shoulder, I say. Now that I am safe, the adrenaline that propelled me here is fading, and the pain is getting worse. I sink to my knees. Water drips from my clothes onto the cement floor. A sob rises within me, desperate for release, and I choke it back. A woman named Tessa, who lived down the street from us, rolls out a pallet. She was married to a council member, but I don't see him here. He is probably dead. Someone else carries a lamp from one corner to the other so we have light. Caleb produces a first aid kit, and Susan brings me a bottle of water. There is no better place to need help than a room full of members of Abnegation. I glance at Caleb. He's wearing gray again. Seeing him in the erudite compound feels like a dream now. My father comes to me, lifts my arm across his shoulders, and helps me across the room. Why are you wet? Caleb says. They tried to drown me, I say. Why are you here? I did what you said, what Mom said. I researched the simulation serum and found out that Janine was working to develop long-range transmitters for the serum so its signal could stretch farther, which led me to information about erudite and dauntless. Anyway, I dropped out of initiation when I figured out what was happening. I would have warned you, but it was too late, he says. I'm factionless now. No, you aren't, my father says sternly. You're with us. I kneel on the pallet, and Caleb cuts a piece of my shirt away from my shoulder with a pair of medical scissors. Caleb peels the square of fabric away, revealing first the abnegation tattoo on my right shoulder, and second, the three birds on my collarbone. Caleb and my father stare at both tattoos with the same look of fascination and shock, but say nothing about them. I lie on my stomach. Caleb squeezes my palm as my father gets the antiseptic from the first aid kit. "Have you ever taken a bullet out of someone before?" I ask, a shaky laugh in my voice. "The things I know how to do might surprise you," he replies. A lot of things about my parents might surprise me. I think of Mom's tattoo and bite my lip. "This will hurt," he says. I don't see the knife go in, but I feel it. Pain spreads through my body, and I scream through gritted teeth, crushing Caleb's hand. Over the screaming, I hear my father ask me to relax my back. Tears run from the corners of my eyes, and I do as he tells me. The pain starts again, and I feel the knife moving under my skin, and I'm still screaming. "Got it," he says. He drops something on the floor with a ding. Caleb looks at my father and then at me, and then he laughs. I haven't heard him laugh in so long that the sound makes me cry. "What's so funny?" I say, sniffling. "I never thought I would see us together again," he says. My father cleans the skin around my wound with something cold. "Stitching time," he says. I nod. He threads the needle like he's done it 1,000 times. "One," he says. "Two. Three." I clench my jaw and stay quiet this time. Of all the pain I have suffered today, the pain of getting shot and almost drowning and taking the bullet out again, the pain of finding and losing my mother and Tobias, this is the easiest to bear. My father finishes stitching my wound, ties off the thread and covers the stitches with a bandage. Caleb helps me sit up and separates the hems of his 2 shirts, pulling the long-sleeved one over his head and offering it to me. My father helps me guide my right arm through the shirt sleeve, and I pull the rest over my head. It is baggy and smells fresh. Smells like Caleb. "So," my father says quietly, "where is your mother?" I look down. I don't want to deliver this news. I don't want to have this news to begin with. "She's gone," I say. "She saved me." Caleb closes his eyes and takes a deep breath. My father looks momentarily stricken, and then recovers himself, averting his glistening eyes and nodding. "That is good," he says, sounding strained. "A good death. If I speak right now, I will break down, and I can't afford to do that. So I just nod. Eric called Al's suicide brave, and he was wrong. My mother's death was brave. I remember how calm she was. How determined. It isn't just brave that she died for me. It is brave that she did it without announcing it, without hesitation, and without appearing to consider another option. He helps me to my feet. Time to face the rest of the room. My mother told me to save them. Because of that, and because I am dauntless, it's my duty to lead now. I have no idea how to bear that burden. Marcus gets up. A vision of him whipping my arm with a belt rushes into my mind when I see him, and my chest squeezes. "We are only safe here for so long," Marcus says eventually. "We need to get out of the city. Our best option is to go to the Amity compound in the hope that they'll take us in. Do you know anything about the Dauntless strategy, Beatrice? Will they stop fighting at night?" "It's not Dauntless strategy," I say. "This whole thing is masterminded by the Erudite. And it's not like they're giving orders." "Not giving orders," my father says. "What do you mean?" "I mean," I say, 90% of the Dauntless are sleepwalking right now. They're in a simulation, and they don't know what they're doing. The only reason I'm not just like them is that I'm... I hesitate on the word. "The mind control doesn't affect me." "Mind control? So they don't know that they're killing people right now?" my father asks me, his eyes wide. "No. That's... awful." Marcus shakes his head. His sympathetic tone sounds manufactured to me. "Waking up and realizing what you've done." The room goes quiet. probably as all the abnegation, imagine themselves in the place of the dauntless soldiers. And that's when it occurs to me. We have to wake them up, I say.
What?
Marcus says. If we wake the dauntless up, they will probably revolt when they realize what's going on, I explain. The erudite won't have an army. The abnegation will stop dying. This will be over.
It won't be that simple, my father says. Even without the dauntless helping them, the erudite will find another way to...
And how are we supposed to wake them up?
Marcus says. We find the computers that control the simulation and destroy the data, I say. The program, everything.
Easier said than done, Caleb says.
It could be anywhere. We can't just appear at the erudite compound and start poking around.
It's... I frown. Janine.
Janine was talking about something important when Tobias and I came into her office. Important enough to hang up on someone.
You can't just leave it undefended.
And then, when she was sending Tobias away,
send him to the control room.
The control room where Tobias used to work. With the Dauntless security monitors and the Dauntless computers.
It's at Dauntless headquarters, I say. It makes sense. That's where all the data about the Dauntless is stored. So why not control them from there?
I faintly register that I said them. As of yesterday, I technically became Dauntless, but I don't feel like one. And I am not abnegation either. I guess I am what I've always been. Not Dauntless, not abnegation, not factionless. Divergent.
Are you sure? My father asks.
It's an informed guess, I say, and it's the best theory I have.
Then we'll have to decide who goes and who continues on to Amity, he says. What kind of help do you need, Beatrice?
The question stuns me, as does the expression he wears. He looks at me like I'm a peer. He speaks to me like I'm a peer. Either he has accepted that I'm an adult now, or he has accepted that I'm no longer his daughter. The latter is more likely. And more painful.
Anyone who can and will fire a gun, I say, and isn't afraid of heights.
Chapter 37. Erudite and Dauntless forces are concentrated in the abnegation sector of the city, so as long as we run away from the abnegation sector, we are less likely to encounter difficulty. I didn't get to decide who was coming with me. Caleb was the obvious choice, since he knows the most about the erudite plan. Marcus insisted that he go, despite my protests, because he is good with computers, and my father acted like his place was assumed from the beginning. I watched the others run in the opposite direction, toward safety, toward Amity, for a few seconds, and then I turn away, toward the city, toward the war. We stand next to the railroad tracks, which will carry us into danger.
What time is it?
I ask Caleb. He checks his watch.
3:12.
Should be here any second, I say.
Will it stop?
He asks. I shake my head. It goes slowly through the city. We'll run next to the car for a few feet, and then climb inside. Jumping on trains seems easy to me now. Natural. It won't be as easy for the rest of them. But we can't stop now. I look over my left shoulder and see the headlights burning gold against the gray buildings and roads. I bounce on the balls of my feet as the lights grow larger and larger, and then the front of the train glides past me, and I start jogging. When I see an open car, I pick up my pace to keep stride with it, and grab the handle on the left, swinging myself inside. Caleb jumps, landing hard and rolling on his side to get in, and he helps Marcus. My father lands on his stomach, pulling his legs in behind him. They move away from the doorway, but I stand on the edge with one hand on a handle, watching the city pass. If I were Janine, I would send the majority of Dauntless soldiers to the Dauntless entrance above the pit, outside the glass building. It would be smarter to go in the back entrance, the one that requires jumping off a building.
I assume you now regret choosing Dauntless, Marcus says.
I'm surprised my father didn't ask that question, but he, like me, is watching the city. The train passes the erudite compound, which is dark now.
It looks peaceful from a distance. And inside those walls, it probably is peaceful. Far removed from the conflict and the reality of what they have done. I shake my head.
Not even after your faction's leaders decided to join in a plot to overthrow the government?
Marcus spits. There were some things I needed to learn.
How to be brave,
my father says quietly.
How to be selfless,
I say.
Often they're the same thing.
Is that why you got Abnegation's symbol tattooed on your shoulder?
Caleb asks.
I'm almost sure that I see a smile in my father's eyes.
I smile faintly back and nod.
And Dauntless on the other.
The glass building above the pit reflects sunlight into my eyes. I stand, holding the handle next to the door for balance, almost there.
When I tell you to jump, I say, you jump as far as you can.
Jump? Caleb asks.
We're 7 stories up, Triss.
Onto a roof, I add. Seeing the stunned look on his face, I say,
that's why they call it a test of bravery.
Half of bravery is perspective. The first time I did this, it was one of the hardest things I had ever done. Now, preparing to jump off a moving train is nothing, because I have done more difficult things in the past few weeks than most people will in a lifetime, and yet none of it compares to what I am about to do in the Dauntless compound. If I survive, I will undoubtedly go on to do far more difficult things than even that, like live without a faction, something I never imagined possible.
Dad, you go, I say, stepping back so he can stand by the edge.
If he and Marcus go first, I can time it so they have to jump the shortest distance. Hopefully Caleb and I can jump far enough to make it, because we're younger. It's a chance I have to take.
The train tracks curve, and when they line up with the edge of the roof, I shout, jump!
My father bends his knees and launches himself forward. I don't wait to see if he makes it. I shove Marcus forward and shout, jump!
My father lands on the roof, so close to the edge that I gasp. He sits down on the gravel, and I push Caleb in front of me. He stands at the edge of the train car and jumps without me having to tell him to. I take a few steps back to give myself a running start and leap out of the car, just as the train reaches the end of the roof. For an instant, I am suspended in nothingness, and then my feet slam into cement, and I stumble to the side, away from the roof's edge. My knees ache, and the impact shudders through my body, making my shoulder throb. I sit down, breathing hard, and look across the rooftop. Caleb and my father stand at the edge of the roof, their hands around Marcus's arms. He didn't make it, but he hasn't fallen yet. Somewhere inside me, a vicious voice chants, fall, fall, fall. But he doesn't. My father and Caleb haul him onto the roof. I stand up, brushing gravel off my pants. The thought of what comes next has me preoccupied. It is one thing to ask people to jump off a train, but a roof?
This next part is why I asked about fear of heights, I say, walking to the edge of the roof.
I hear their shuffling footsteps behind me and step onto the ledge.
Wind rushes up the side of the building and lifts my shirt from my skin. I stare down at the hole in the ground, 7 stories below me, and then close my eyes as the air blows over my face.
There's a net at the bottom, I say, looking over my shoulder. They look confused. They haven't figured out what I am asking them to do yet.
Don't think, I say. Just jump.
I turn, and as I turn, I lean back, compromising my balance. I drop like a stone, my eyes closed, 1 arm outstretched to feel the wind. I relax my muscles as much as I can before I hit the net, which feels like a slab of cement hitting my shoulder. I grit my teeth and roll to the edge, grabbing the pole that supports the net, and swing my leg over the side. I land on my knees on the platform, my eyes blurry with tears. Caleb yelps as the net curls around his body, and then straightens. I stand with some difficulty.
Caleb!
I hiss.
Over here!
Breathing heavily, Caleb crawls to the side of the net and drops over the edge, hitting the platform hard. Wincing, he pushes himself to his feet and stares at me, his mouth open.
How many times have you done that?
He asks between breaths.
Twice now, I say.
He shakes his head. When my father hits the net, Caleb helps him across. When he stands on the platform, he leans and vomits over the side. I descend the stairs, and when I get to the bottom, I hear Marcus hit the net with a groan. The cavern is empty, and the hallways stretch into darkness.
Janine made it sound like there was no one left in the Dauntless compound, except the soldiers she sent back to guard the computers. If we can find Dauntless soldiers, we can find the computers.
I look over my shoulder. Marcus stands on the platform, white as a sheet, but unharmed.
So this is the Dauntless compound, says Marcus.
Yes, I say.
And?
And I never thought I would get to see it, he replies, his hand skimming a wall.
No need to be so defensive, Beatrice.
I never noticed how cold his eyes were before.
Do you have a plan, Beatrice? My father says.
Yes. And it's true. I do. Though I'm not sure when I developed it. I'm also not sure it will work. I can count on a few things. There aren't many Dauntless in the compound. The Dauntless aren't known for their subtlety, and I'll do anything to stop them.
We walk down the hallway that leads to the pit, which is striped with light every 10 feet. When we walk into the first patch of light, I hear a gunshot and drop to the ground.
Someone must have seen us.
I crawl into the next dark patch. The spark from the gun flashed across the room by the door that leads to the pit.
Everyone okay? I ask.
Yes, my father says.
Stay here, then.
I run to the side of the room. The lights protrude from the wall, so directly beneath each one is a slit of shadow. I am small enough to hide in it, if I turn to the side. I can creep along the edge of the room and surprise whatever guard is shooting at us before he gets the chance to fire a bullet into my brain. Maybe. One of the things I thank Dauntless for is the preparedness that eliminates my fear.
"Whoever's there," a voice shouts, "surrender your weapons and put your hands up."
I turn to the side and press my back to the stone wall. I shuffle quickly sideways, one foot crossing over the other, squinting to see through the semi-darkness. Another gunshot fires into silence. I reach the last light and stand for a moment in shadow, letting my eyes adjust. I can't win a fight, but if I can move fast enough, I won't have to fight. My footsteps light. I walk toward the guard, who stands by the door. A few yards away, I realize that I know that dark hair that always gleams, even in relative darkness, and that long nose with a narrow bridge. It's Peter. Cold slips over my skin and around my heart and into the pit of my stomach. His face is tense. He isn't a sleepwalker. He looks around, but his eyes search the air above me and beyond me. Judging by his silence, he does not intend to negotiate with us. He will kill us without question. I lick my lips, sprint the last few steps, and thrust the heel of my hand up. The blow connects with his nose, and he shouts, bringing both hands up to cover his face. My body jolts with nervous energy, and as his eyes squint, I kick him in the groin. He drops to his knees, his gun clattering to the ground. I grab it and press the barrel to the top of his head.
"How are you awake?" I demand.
He lifts his head, and I click the bullet into its chamber, raising an eyebrow at him.
"The Dauntless leaders! They evaluated my records and removed me from the simulation," he says.
"Because they figured out that you already have murderous tendencies and wouldn't mind killing a few hundred people while conscious," I say.
"Makes sense."
"I'm not murderous."
I never knew a Kander who was such a liar.
I tap the gun against his skull. "Where are the computers that control the simulation, Peter?"
"You won't shoot me."
"People tend to overestimate my character," I say quietly. "They think that because I'm small, or a girl, or stiff, I can't possibly be cruel. But they're wrong."
I shift the gun 3 inches to the left and fire at his arm. His screams fill the hallway. Blood spurts from the wound, and he screams again, pressing his forehead to the ground. I shift the gun back to his head. ignoring the pang of guilt in my chest.
Now that you realize your mistake, I say, I will give you another chance to tell me what I need to know before I shoot you somewhere worse.
Another thing I can count on. Peter is not selfless. He turns his head and focuses a bright eye on me. His teeth close over his lower lip, and his breaths shake on the way out, and on the way in, and on the way out again.
They're listening, he spits. If you don't kill me, they will. The only way I'll tell you is if you get me out of here.
What?
Take me, with you, he says, wincing.
You want me to take you? I say.
The person who tried to kill me.
With me?
I do, he groans. If you expect to find out what you need to know.
It feels like a choice, but it isn't. Every minute that I waste staring at Peter, thinking about how he haunts my nightmares and the damage he did to me, another dozen abnegation members die at the hands of the brain-dead Dauntless Army.
Fine, I say, almost choking on the word.
Fine. I hear footsteps behind me. Holding the gun steady, I look over my shoulder. My father and the others walk toward us. My father takes off his long-sleeved shirt. He wears a gray t-shirt beneath it. He crouches next to Peter and loops the fabric around his arm, tying it tightly. As he presses the fabric to the blood running down Peter's arm, he looks up at me and says, "Was it really necessary to shoot him?" I don't answer.
"Sometimes pain is for the greater good," says Marcus calmly.
In my head, I see him standing before Tobias with a belt in hand and hear his voice echo,
"This is for your own good."
I look at him for a few seconds. Does he really believe that?
It sounds like something the Dauntless would say.
"Let's go," I say. "Get up, Peter."
"You want him to walk?" Caleb demands. "Are you insane?"
"Did I shoot him in the leg?" I say.
"No, he walks."
"Where do we go, Peter?"
Caleb helps Peter to his feet.
"The glass building," he says, wincing.
"Eighth floor."
He leads the way through the door. I walk into the roar of the river and the blue glow of the pit, which is emptier now than I have ever seen it before. I scan the walls, searching for signs of life, but I see no movement and no figures standing in darkness. I keep my gun in hand and start toward the path that leads to the glass ceiling. The emptiness makes me shiver. It reminds me of the endless field in my crow nightmares.
"What makes you think you have the right to shoot someone?"
my father says as he follows me up the path. We pass the tattoo place. Where is Tori now? And Christina?
"Now isn't the time for debates about ethics," I say. "Now is the perfect time," he says, "because you will soon get the opportunity to shoot someone again, and if you don't realize..."
"Realize what?" I say without turning around.
"That every second I waste means another abnegation dead and another Dauntless made into a murderer?
I've realized that. Now it's your turn."
"There is a right way to do things."
"What makes you so sure that you know what it is?" I say.
"Please, stop fighting," Caleb interrupts, his voice chiding.
"We have more important things to do right now." I keep climbing, my cheeks hot. A few months ago, I would not have dared to snap at my father. A few hours ago, I might not have done it either. But something changed when they shot my mother, when they took Tobias. I hear my father huff and puff over the sound of rushing water. I forgot that he is older than I am, that his frame can no longer tolerate the weight of his body. Before I ascend the metal stairs that will carry me above the glass ceiling, I wait in darkness and watch the light cast on the pit walls by the sun. I watch until a shadow shifts over the sunlit wall and count until the next shadow appears. The guards make their rounds every minute and a half, stand for 20 seconds, and then move on.
"There are men with guns up there. When they see me, they will kill me, if they can," I tell my father quietly.
I search his eyes.
"Should I let them?"
He stares at me for a few seconds.
"Go," he says. "And God help you."
I climb the stairs carefully, stopping just before my head emerges. I wait, watching the shadows move, and when one of them stops, I step up, point my gun, and shoot. The bullet does not hit the guard. It shatters the window behind him. I fire again and duck as bullets hit the floor around me with a ding. Thank God the glass ceiling is bulletproof, or the glass would break and I would fall to my death. One guard down. I breathe deeply and put just my hand over the ceiling, looking through the glass to see my target. I tilt the gun back and fire at the guard running toward me. The bullet hits him in the arm. Luckily, it is his shooting arm, because he drops his gun and it skids across the floor. My body shaking, I launch myself through the hole in the ceiling and snatch the fallen gun before he can get to it. A bullet whizzes past my head, so close to hitting me that it moves my hair. Eyes wide, I fling my right arm over my shoulder, forcing a searing pain through my body, and fire three times behind me. By some miracle, one of the bullets hits a guard, and my eyes water uncontrollably from the pain in my shoulder. I just rip my stitches. I'm sure of it. Another guard stands across from me. I lie flat on my stomach and point both guns at him, my arms resting on the floor. I stare into the black pinprick that is his gun barrel. Then something surprising happens. He jerks his chin to the side, telling me to go. He must be divergent. "All clear!" I shout. The guard ducks into the fear landscape room, and he's gone. Slowly, I get to my feet, holding my right arm against my chest. I have tunnel vision. I'm running along this path, and I will not be able to stop, will not be able to think of anything until I reach the end. I hand one gun to Caleb and slide the other one under my belt. "I think you and Marcus should stay here with him," I say, jerking my head toward Peter. "He'll just slow us down. Make sure no one comes after us." I hope he doesn't understand what I'm doing, keeping him here so he stays safe, even though he would gladly give his life for this. If I go up into the building, I probably won't come back down. The best I can hope for is to destroy the simulation before someone kills me. When did I decide on this suicide mission? Why wasn't it more difficult? "I can't stay here while you go up there and risk your life," says Caleb. "I need you to," I say. Peter sinks to his knees. His face glistens with sweat. For a second, I almost feel bad for him. But then I remember Edward, and the itch of fabric over my eyes as my attackers blindfolded me, and my sympathy is lost to hatred. Caleb eventually nods. I approach one of the fallen guards and take his gun, keeping my eyes away from the injury that killed him. My head pounds. I haven't eaten, I haven't slept, I haven't sobbed or screamed or even paused for a moment. I bite my lip and push myself toward the elevators on the right side of the room. Level 8. Once the elevator doors close, I lean the side of my head against the glass and listen to the beeps. I glance at my father. "Thank you for protecting Caleb," my father says. "Beatrice, I..." The elevator reaches the 8th floor, and the doors open. 2 guards stand ready with guns in hand. Their faces blank. My eyes widen, and I drop to my belly on the ground as the shots go off. I hear bullets strike glass. The guards slump to the ground, one alive and groaning, the other fading fast. My father stands above them, his gun still held out from his body. I stumble to my feet. Guards run down the hallway on the left. Judging by the synchronicity of their footsteps, they are controlled by the simulation. I could run down the right hallway, but if the guards came from the left hallway, that's where the computers are. I drop to the ground between the guards my father just shot, and lie as still as I can. My father jumps out of the elevator and sprints down the right hallway, drawing the dauntless guards after him. I clap my hand over my mouth to keep from screaming at him. That hallway will end. I try to bury my head so I don't see it, but I can't. I peer over the fallen guard's back. My father fires over his shoulder at the guards pursuing him, but he is not fast enough. One of them fires at his stomach, and he groans so loud I can almost feel it in my chest. He clutches his gut, his shoulders hitting the wall, and fires again and again. The guards are under the simulation. They keep moving even when the bullets hit them, keep moving until their hearts stop. but they don't reach my father. Blood spills over his hand, and the color drains from his face. Another shot, and the last guard is down.
Dad, I say. I mean for it to be a shout, but it is just a wheeze.
He slumps to the ground. Our eyes meet like the yards between us are nothing. His mouth opens like he's about to say something, but then his chin drops to his chest, and his body relaxes. My eyes burn, and I am too weak to rise. The scent of sweat and blood makes me feel sick. I want to rest my head on the ground, and let that be the end of it. I want to sleep now and never wake. But what I said to my father before was right. For every second that I waste, another abnegation member dies. There is only one thing left for me in the world now, and it is to destroy the simulation. I push myself up and run down the hallway, turning right at the end. There is only one door ahead. I open it. The opposite wall is made up entirely of screens, each a foot tall and a foot wide. There are dozens of them, each one showing a different part of the city. The fence, the hub, the streets in the abnegation sector, now crawling with dauntless soldiers. The ground level of the building below us, where Caleb, Marcus, and Peter wait for me to return. It is a wall of everything I have ever seen, everything I have ever known. One of the screens has a line of code on it, instead of an image. It breezes past faster than I can read. It is the simulation. The code already compiled, a complicated list of commands that anticipate and address a thousand different outcomes. In front of the screen is a chair and a desk. Sitting in the chair is a dauntless soldier.
Tobias,
I say. Chapter 38. Tobias's head turns, and his dark eyes shift to me, his eyebrows drawn in. He stands. He looks confused. He raises his gun.
Drop your weapon, he says.
Tobias, I say. You're in a simulation.
Drop your weapon, he repeats, or I'll fire.
Janine said he didn't know me. Janine also said that the simulation made Tobias's friends into enemies. He will shoot me if he has to. I set my gun down at my feet.
Drop your weapon! Shouts Tobias.
I did, I say.
A little voice in my head sings that he can't hear me. He can't see me. He doesn't know me. Tongues of flame press behind my eyes. I can't just stand here and let him shoot me. I run at him, grabbing his wrist. I feel his muscles shift as he pinches the trigger and duck my head just in time. The bullet hits the wall behind me. Gasping, I kick him in the ribs and twist his wrist to the side as hard as I can. He drops the gun. I can't beat Tobias in a fight. I know that already. But I have to destroy the computer. I dive for the gun, but before I can touch it, he grabs me and wrenches me to the side. I stare into his dark, conflicted eyes for an instant before he punches me in the jaw. My head jerks to the side and I cringe away from him, flinging my hands up to protect my face. I can't fall. I can't fall or he'll kick me, and that will be worse. That will be much worse. I kick the gun back with my heel so he can't grab it and, ignoring the throbbing in my jaw, kick him in the stomach. He catches my foot and pulls me down so I fall on my shoulder. The pain makes my vision go black at the edges. I stare up at him. He pulls his foot back like he's about to kick me, and I roll onto my knees, stretching my arm out for the gun. I don't know what I'll do with it. I can't shoot him. I can't shoot him. I can't. He is in there somewhere. He grabs me by my hair and yanks me to the side. I reach back and grab his wrist, but he's too strong, and my forehead smacks into the wall. He's in there somewhere. Tobias, I say. Did his grip falter? I twist and kick back, my heel hitting him in the leg. When my hair slips through his fingers, I dive at the gun, and my fingertips close around the cool metal. I flip over onto my back and point the gun at him. Tobias, I say. I know you're in there somewhere. But if he was, he probably wouldn't start toward me like he was about to kill me for certain this time. My head throbs. I stand. Tobias, please. I am begging. I am pathetic. Tears make my face hot. Please, see me.
He walks toward me. His movements dangerous, fast, powerful. The gun shakes in my hands.
Please see me, Tobias. Please.
Even when he scowls, his eyes look thoughtful, and I remember how his mouth curled when he smiled. I can't kill him. I'm not sure if I love him. Not sure if that's why. But I am sure of what he would do if our positions were reversed. I am sure that nothing is worth killing him for. I have done this before, in my fear landscape, with the gun in my hand, a voice shouting at me to fire at the people I love. I volunteered to die instead, that time. But I can't imagine how that would help me now. But I just know. I know what the right thing to do is. My father says, used to say, that there is power in self-sacrifice. I turn the gun in my hands and press it into Tobias's palm. He pushes the barrel into my forehead. My tears have stopped, and the air feels cold as it touches my cheeks. I reach out and rest my hand on his chest so I can feel his heartbeat. At least his heartbeat is still him. The bullet clicks into the chamber. Maybe it will be as easy to let him shoot me as it was in the fear landscape, as it is in my dreams. Maybe it will just be a bang, and the lights will lift, and I will find myself in another world. I stand still and wait. Can I be forgiven for all I've done to get here? I don't know. I don't know. Please. Chapter 39. The shot doesn't come. He stares at me with the same ferocity, but doesn't move. Why doesn't he shoot me? His heart pounds against my palm, and my own heart lifts. He is divergent. He can fight the simulation. Any simulation. Tobias, I say. It's me. I step forward and wrap my arms around him. His body is stiff. His heart beats faster. I can feel it against my cheek. A thud against my cheek. A thud as the gun hits the floor. He grabs my shoulders too hard, his fingers digging into my skin where the bullet was. I cry out as he pulls me back. Maybe he means to kill me in some crueler way. Tris, he says, and it's him again. His mouth collides with mine. His arm wraps around me, and he lifts me up, holding me against him, his hands clutching at my back. His face and the back of his neck are slick with sweat. His body is shaking, and my shoulder blazes with pain, but I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. He sets me down and stares at me, his fingers brushing over my forehead, my eyebrows, my cheeks, my lips. Something like a sob and a sigh and a moan escapes him, and he kisses me again. His eyes are bright with tears. I never thought I would see Tobias cry. It makes me hurt. I pull myself to his chest and cry into his shirt. All the throbbing in my head comes back, and the ache in my shoulder, and I feel like my body weight doubles. I lean against him, and he supports me. How did you do it? I say. I don't know, he says. I just heard your voice. After a few seconds, I remember why I'm here. I pull back and wipe my cheeks with the heels of my hands and turn toward the screens again. I see one that overlooks the drinking fountain. Tobias was so paranoid when I was railing against Dauntless there. He kept looking at the wall above the fountain. Now I know why. Tobias and I stand there for a while, and I think I know what he's thinking, because I'm thinking it too. How can something so small control so many people? Was I running the simulation? He says. I don't know if you were running it so much as monitoring it, I say. It's already complete. I have no idea how, but Janine made it so it could work on its own. He shakes his head. It's incredible. Terrible evil. But incredible. I see movement on one of the screens, and I see my brother Marcus and Peter standing on the first floor of the building. Surrounding them are Dauntless soldiers, all in black, all carrying weapons. Tobias, I say tersely. Now! He runs to the computer screen and taps it a few times with his finger. I can't look at what he's doing. All I can see is my brother.
He holds the gun I gave him straight out from his body, like he's ready to use it. I bite my lip. Don't shoot. Tobias presses a screen a few more times, typing in letters that make no sense to me. Don't shoot. I see a flash of light.